Good evening, and welcome to the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County Candidate Forum. My name is Jan Flora. I'm a member of the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County, and I'll moderate tonight's forum. The League is a nonpartisan political organization that encourages active participation in government. We do voter registration drives. We promote understanding of public policy through public lectures and forums, such as the one this evening. And we influence public policy through education and advocacy. Tonight, we will meet the Democratic candidates for Story County Supervisor competing in the upcoming primary election. The candidates are Reno Berg and Loris Olson. We are holding a forum for Democratic candidates only because the Republican candidate for supervisor, Scott Chabon, is unopposed in the primary. We will begin with a five-minute introduction from each candidate. After the candidate introductions, we'll open the forum to questions and comments from the audience. So we'll now begin the introductory remarks, beginning with Reno Berg.
Well, thank you and good evening. My name is Reno Berg, as you've already heard. A little bit about myself. I moved here to Story County in 1977. I have been, for all practical purposes, almost a 40-year resident of this county. I specifically moved here in 1977 to assume the job of president and CEO of Mainstream Living. Mainstream Living is a private, not-for-profit organization serving people with intellectual disabilities and persons with mental illness in a four-county area, Story, Polk, Dallas, and Boone. We provided vocational and residential services. When I retired in 2013, we had an $18 million budget. We employed 570 people, and we served 500 people every day in those four counties, many of whom we served 24 hours a day. I am married to my wife, Jan, who will raise her hand back there, for 46 years. I have three adult children. I am fortunate enough to have 11 grandchildren. Seven of them live here in Ames, and four of them live in Milwaukee. They range in age from sophomores in college all the way down to fifth grade and everything in between. My campaign has been endorsed by Senator Herman Quirnbach, Representative Lisa Heddens, Representative Beth Wessel-Crochelle, and George Blitzos, the founder and CEO Emeritus of Youth and Shelter Services. In 2010, I was named Business Person of the Year by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. My activities in the community are Vice President of Raising Readers in Story County. I have served on the Ames Park and Rec Commission for two terms. I have served on the board of Ames Minor Hockey, and have a long history of being in the community and being active in the community and having knowledge of what's going on here for the last 40 years. So I think that's a sufficient introduction.
Thank you to the League today for hosting this. I'm going to apologize right up front. I have a cold, so I have no idea how long my voice is going to last with having to speak very loudly. I'm Loris Olson, and I'm a journalist. I'm an Iowa native. I've lived in Mason City, West Des Moines. That's where I grew up, lived in Des Moines. I attended college on the 18-year plan. You can ask a question about that if you'd like later, okay? My first career was in mortgage banking, and it was with Norwest, which is now Wells Fargo. And I left in the 1980s as an assistant vice president, serving as the corporate troubleshooter, where my duties included budgeting and employee management assistance for 58 branches with about 1,000 employees. I went back to school for journalism at Drake University in 1991, and I finished in 93. I trained and held my first professional job in journalism with the Des Moines Register. And I have worked at newspapers in a radio station in Wisconsin and Alaska. The Register hired me in 2002 to come up here and be section editor of their new Ames section. I've been the owner of the publisher of the Ames 365 and Ames News Online websites and the Ames Bulletin Board. I'm married, honey, wait, raise your hand, to my husband, Carrie, who's a physics professor at Iowa State. We have no children and therefore no grandchildren, but we do have two cats, and we have a host of foster dogs and cats that wander in and out of our house, okay? I have 20 years experience covering local government. In addition, I belong to the Kiwanis Club, and I currently am serving on the State League of Women Voters Task Force studying tax incremental financing. I also am on the board and the executive board of Community and Family Services, which provides mental health and substance abuse services in an 8-county area. I covered Story County government for over a decade, and I undertook a 2-year kind of self-imposed or self-initiated job study of the Board of Supervisors. I'm very passionate about our county government, especially the Board of Supervisors, and the key role that they play in assisting our other elected county officials. Also, there are many issues facing Story County that are the ones that are facing our local governments also. And the county is in a unique position to partner with our cities, our smaller towns, and our citizens living in the unincorporated areas to create solutions for everyone. My experience covering and interacting with local governments in 3 states has shown me that there are multiple solutions for common challenges and allows me to bring new concepts and methods to the board table. And my experience in belonging to groups from the James Chamber to Kiwanis to the League of Women Voters has shown me that not all in our community automatically enjoy equal participation in local planning decision groups. I want to serve because I see the need for a knowledgeable voice to represent diverse viewpoints and different perspectives, and I believe I am that voice. I'm going to just read off some of the committees and places, county meetings that I've attended over since 2002. Of course, I've attended hundreds of Story County Board of Supervisor meetings, Story County Budget Work Sessions, Story County Public Board of Health, the quarterly Story County Economic Development Group meetings, the quarterly Story County Emergency Management and their related meetings. In addition, I participated in the 2012 to 2014 Story County Visioning and Strategic Planning Sessions. I attended the Squaw Creek Watershed Management Authority meetings from the initial consultant report through the formation of the plan. I attended the Government Restructuring Committee. I attended the first 18 months of meetings for the Central Iowa Community Services Mental Health Region, including the initial organizational meetings. I also spent a decade covering the Sheriff's Department, Economic Development, the County Engineers Department, and Story County Conservation. And in the decade plus that I covered local governments in other areas, I have extensive exposure to government bidding, contracting practices, facility construction and management, and public entity human resource practices. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, candidates. Now it's the turn of the audience to ask questions, make comments, and provide information to the candidates. You'll have a minute to ask your question, and each of the candidates will have a minute and a half to respond. Who would like to be first?
My name is John Kramer, and my question is how you feel about a 5-person board as opposed to a 3-person board. I'm a little bit familiar with this from another county where I lived, and anyway, the short story is 3 is not enough people to represent the entire county, especially the smaller rural towns in Story County.
We'll start with Loris, and then on each question we'll alternate who goes first, if that sounds okay.
Okay. Well, thank you, John, for the question. I ran twice before, in 2012 and 2014, as an independent. And on both times, I pushed 5 part-time supervisors as opposed to 3 full-time supervisors. And I am still committed to that. What it will take is 11,000 signatures on a petition if the public initiates it. If it is, however, put on the put before the voters as a result of the Board of Supervisors putting it there, it only takes two of the three of us to make that motion, second it, and vote for it. I will make the motion. As everyone knows, unfortunately, we had a second vacancy open up recently due to death. And so there will actually be two candidates in the fall, and it's a good question for the other candidate also. But I agree with you. It's better representation. It allows more people to participate. It prevents any kind of grouping or kind of insider discussion. And I fully believe that it's the way to go. Thank you.
Well, Loris and I don't disagree on this issue. I also believe that five supervisors would be appropriate for Story County, and I'll tell you how you should pay for it. You should take the current salary of the three supervisors that are serving, divide it by five, and then you've got five supervisors. But I also think that having five supervisors better represents the rural areas of the county that perhaps have not been represented. And Loris described how that should happen. And I would also make a motion, if elected, that five supervisors would be appropriate.
I'm Roger Engstrom. I lived in North Grand Mall, but I have a farm out in Milford Township, and my concern is water quality. And I think I'd like to hear your views on how we can go about improving what we're doing now, and I don't think we're doing enough. I would further like to see the Board of Supervisors encourage the farmers to use no-till and other conservation measures to help our water quality and to help our total agricultural business.
Well, Roger, thanks for the question, and I agree with you that water quality is a big issue. And I think the Story County Conservation Board has done a relatively good job of addressing water quality issues. However, as you said, they can do more. There should be more done with runoff. There should be more done with flood protection water quality in general. So in the environment, in my opinion, is an important topic for the Board of Supervisors, and I would be interested in hearing more about the water quality issues in Story County and what the Board of Supervisors could do about that specifically.
I agree also. I'm very concerned about water quality. And as I've sat and listened over the years, I think maybe I mentioned that I attended the meetings for the Squaw Creek Water Management Authority, where the county worked with another county, Boone County, and they talked about how they could get farmers to begin to practice not only no-till, but to leave buffers around the streams. Drainage districts also contribute to this problem, and I can tell you that the Story County Board of Supervisors is looking at their role as drainage district trustees. There's going to be a study of Drainage District 5, and if I'm not mistaken, Milford is in Drainage District 5, okay? Also, there about 3 or 4 years ago, there was a fascinating study that Iowa State did for the county about Hickory Grove and the water pollution at Hickory Grove. And the county took a look at that and heard, and it's not all just the farms. We also ended up with a situation where there were about, I think, a half a dozen homes that were leaking septic tanks. So the county went ahead and created a program to help them bring their septic tanks up to code. And I support that kind of funding and those kind of creative solutions. The other thing we learned is that Hickory Grove, anyway, the geese were a problem. Other than there was laughter about at the board at the time about hiring a dog. $50,000 somebody rents out their dog to chase the geese. I don't think we went for that one, and I wouldn't either. Thank you.
Thank you. My name is Susie Petra. Citizens in Story County have been very passionately vocal about wanting clean water, clean air to breathe, and healthy soil. My question is, even though our master matrix could be strengthened, we would like to see the Board of Supervisors have a backbone and collectively encourage our legislature to put a moratorium on CAFOs. Could you talk to that?
I think I'll address the issue of the moratorium on CAFOs first, okay? I certainly would urge my fellow supervisors to initiate a letter and contact the counties around us to go down to the state and ask for that. As you know, it's the legislature who gets to decide that. I do know that the Story County supervisors in the past, the current board, has they've sent letters down on issues such as a change in the law for collecting fees that the county attorney was getting for collection of overdue fines, okay? So if we can issue a letter like that, we certainly should be able to issue a letter down to Des Moines saying we really protest this. The other thing is the master matrix group that the county has put together is an improvement over what was done in the past. But the best we could do for any kind of moratorium in Story County, as it was originally mentioned at a meeting, is we could have a moratorium saying we're not going to put our stamp of approval on any of these. However, that opens us for the risk of losing the master matrix because we have to certify that every year. And if we agree to use the master matrix, then we are obligated by that or we lose all of our rights to weigh in at all. Our hands are tied. The public's hands are tied. But I would go for a moratorium letter at least.
Well, again, we're going to agree here because I also think that clean water and clean air is important, and the legislative decision about CAPOs is the legislative decision. But you mentioned that the county board should have some backbone, and I agree with that. Even though the county board is not responsible for a certain thing, they can't approve or disapprove a certain thing, that doesn't mean they can't say, we disapprove of it, and we want to let you know about that. And I think that that is what's needed. An example of that would have been the Bakken Pipeline, that the county board should have said, told the Iowa Utilities Board, we don't want the Bakken Pipeline, and here's why. They didn't do that. If I was on the Board of Supervisors, I would have introduced such a motion.
I'm just going to add ditto the other way.
I'm Catherine Fromm. Considering everything that happens on my farm, I live in the most important place in Story County. And I do know a lot about water issues. I also hail from California, where I live part of the year, and I'm an avocado rancher. That's a good joke, right? With six trees. I do know that the most important issues we have in the future are the environmental issues. And we have farmers north of Story County and in various locations who see themselves as individuals, all the while taking a lot of money from the federal government, which hardly qualifies them to be individuals. What is your position on the suit brought by the Waterworks of Des Moines against the farmers in three Iowa counties?
My position is that I think there's a better way to skin that cat. And it's called sitting down at the table and having reasonable discussions with people and not threatening them with lawsuits. I would bring people together and
and do what?
Have a discussion.
And what would you hope to come out of the discussion?
No lawsuit.
And what would that mean for Des Moines?
Des Moines would have to figure out a different way to handle the problem. I don't think a lawsuit is an appropriate way to deal with this issue. I think the burden is on both parties to come together and solve this issue, the counties that have been sued and the waterworks who are bringing the suit. I'm simply saying there's a better way to handle this than a lawsuit.
We have an area of disagreement, finally. Okay. I do not, in general, like the fact that one government unit sues another government unit because who pays are the taxpayers, sometimes twice, okay? But I believe that Des Moines Water Works needed to get the attention of Northwest Iowa and all supervisors in all of our counties. This comes back to the drainage district issue, the heart of it. In Story County alone, we have 120 drainage districts. Most of them are 100 years old. The tiles are breaking down, and it's even worse in some areas of the state. 3 or 4 years ago, the League of Women Voters had a state meeting that I attended, and we had Bill Stowe there. We had Ralph Rosenberg from the Iowa Environmental Council, and I'm sorry I don't remember the other person, but we talked about drainage districts. We also talked about there is some responsibility, whether it is the Des Moines Water Works or whether it's Ames's municipal water plant, that right now what's happening is we're taking those nitrates out of the water now, we're drinking the water, and then we're dumping them back in so that the next community down has to take them out again. So I think the lawsuit got everyone's attention, and that's probably what needed to happen.
My name is Brenda Brink. I live outside of Huxley, lifelong Iowan. There's a big push to help the wage disparity in this country. And there are several resolutions and several things going on around the state to raise the minimum wage to $15. And I'd like to know your opinions on that for Story County.
I like that Des Moines, Polk County has undertaken a study. That's what I think would be appropriate for Story County also. I believe that there are some special situations we have in Story County that requires an in-depth analysis about whether raising a wage as high to $15 an hour would be the appropriate. I don't like just picking a number. What I do think would be appropriate to see is really how many of our employees really are working at minimum wage, especially full time, and where do we go up? I remember several years ago, a gentleman named Jan Flora did a presentation, once again for the League of Women Voters. We were studying a livable wage. And Jan, I think at that time you said a family of three would take almost $11.75 or $12 per hour. And that was just with one child and to cover minimum child care. And that was just for basic living. So we need to undertake that. I do believe that the one Story County supervisor who will be remaining on the board is already aware that that issue's probably headed our way. I was at a Story County Economic Development Group meeting on last Wednesday, and Rick did bring it up. There were mayors there, and there were people from city clerks from around the county, and he said, we think that this will come this way within the next year. So I support us undertaking a study.
Well, once again, we agree. I'm a firm believer that the minimum wage should go up. I remember when Joni Ernst was running for election, she said that she thought $7.25 was just fine as a minimum wage for the state of Iowa. I'd like to see Senator Ernst live on that. I was just in Minnesota last week. One of the things I do after I've retired is I do accreditation surveys of organizations serving people with disabilities. And I did two of them last week in Minnesota. Minnesota's minimum wage is $9 an hour right now. August 1st, it goes to $9.50. I didn't see any fast food restaurants out of business. I didn't see any convenience stores out of business. And people had help wanted signs in their windows. Business was good in Minnesota. The economy is good as Minnesota. Raising the minimum wage is the thing to do. Whether it's $15 an hour, I think that needs study. But certainly $7.25 is about as inappropriate as it can be.
Hi, my name is Judy Lemish, and my question has to deal with eminent domain. As you know, the ability of government to take private property for public use or purpose. And the only way to stop it is if the proposed taking doesn't meet the requirement for public purpose or public necessity. So I guess I need to know what your position is on the use of eminent domain for non-public good or non-public purposes.
I almost should start this by saying, don't get me started. The eminent domain used by the Bakken pipeline, completely inappropriate. I fully support the people who have brought suit against the Bakken Pipeline. The Bakken Pipeline got that eminent domain because they said they were a utility. I'm not aware of anybody that in the state of Iowa that's writing out a check for utilities to the Bakken Pipeline. It is completely inappropriate. I hope the people that bring the lawsuit win. It is not an appropriate use of eminent domain whatsoever. It does not do the public good. This is a private profit-making company that is shipping oil from one place to another. It has nothing to do with public good.
Hear, hear. Well put, Reno. Well put. I would go further that the first lawsuits have been filed. I, unfortunately, am not on the board now because I would make a motion that the Board of Supervisors ask the county attorney's office to take a look whether it would be appropriate for us to weigh in with a letter as a friend of the court. If lawsuits come further this way, they're still likely to come before I would take office. But I support that. Here's a way to show leadership. Here's a way to stand up. I said earlier, I don't like one government unit normally suing another government unit. But this is a core fundamental issue that goes to what rights do we have as individual citizens when it comes to our property. And the fact that it's the Bakken Pipeline just makes it worse. Right, that we're talking about environmental issues. So that I hope that if it doesn't get that far, but if it does and we're still involved, I would ask my fellow supervisors, let's do something to weigh in as a friend of the court. And obviously, I just want to point out that there's a cost involved even with that, even though we're not suing, asking the county attorney's office to devote resources to investigate on that would cost, but I think it would be well worth the cost.
George Belitzos, I live in unincorporated part of Story County, West Ames. My field and property is right across the street from Crestview Trailer Court. Actually, you've been talking a lot, answering quite a few questions about concerns in the rural part of our county. And we just went through a serious problem in Crestview, and that is overseen by it falls into the Board of Supervisors, Board of Health, and they took action to close that trailer court. Wondered how you both felt that was handled, how you would have done things differently, if at all, and what more could be done for those people who are about to be evicted.
Let's see. The first part of your question was, did I feel that was handled appropriately? I felt that the county staff, Margaret Janes and her two environmental health technicians, did an excellent job of trying to stay on top of that, given that the Department of Natural Resources had the authority at the time, having to do with the number of connections that to that water plant out there. That was a determination about who was had oversight, DNR versus the Story County Board of Health. Margaret was out there multiple times and taking a look. Margaret tried to work with them because she understood that this was a very vulnerable population when it came to housing. Okay. And I feel that Paul Toot was very instrumental in leading an effort of compassion by the county and the discussion to go with $1,000 per residence to place that, offer that up to the people with no conditions. They don't have to stay in the county. They don't have to use it for a down payment on another trailer, et cetera. I think that that was a great decision by the Board of Supervisors. And considering that's about $31,000 that they'll be committing out of funds near the end of the year, that's about what they could do. I see another county employee in the back of the room who will be also, I believe, helping. And I know our community service people are going to be helping these people every way they can to make the transition.
Well, just to follow up with that, the Board of Health gave the owner of that trailer park every opportunity to conform with the law, and gave them extensions and extensions and extensions. And nothing happened, and it ended up in disaster. The people that live there are one step from the street. That's the situation. I think the county staff worked very, as Laura said, worked very hard to rectify that situation. Those people are living, in many cases, in squalor, not having water that's even fit to bathe in, or fit to, it might be fit to pour down the toilet, but it's not fit to bathe in, and it's not fit to drink. The other thing I agree that the county did right was to appropriate $1,000 per person to get them relocated someplace. I wonder how many other county boards would have done that. And I think we can all be pretty proud of this county board for appropriating that $31,000 to help those people move. I'm not sure that any other county would have done that.
My name is Howard Hammond. I'm from down at southwest corner of the county in Slater. And we've heard, I guess, a little question on my part. I'm not sure I'm right on the first comment I'll make, but over the recent year or more, there's been a study done in our county about a so-called C2C plan, and I believe it's to focus on the next 20 years of our county. So it's kind of a simplified question. It could go on for hours. Just respond to what you think about that plan, for what you might know about it, and where you think it ought to be going.
Well, the official title of that is the Cornerstone to Capstone Program, and the county brought in an outside consultant, paid a considerable amount of money to have this plan serviced and put in place. And the plan deals with land use. It deals with service, community facilities and infrastructure, environment and natural resources, fringe area planning, housing, economic development, transportation, and intergovernmental cooperation. Those are the major tenets of the plan. I applaud the county for engaging in this activity. And I wonder how many counties in the state of Iowa, again, have engaged in this kind of planning. And it's a plan that takes a look at the next 20 years to get us to 2036. Now, Howard, I don't know if you're going to make it to 2036. I don't know if I'm going to make it to 2036. But our children and our grandchildren are. And I think it's a bold plan. I think it's a well-thought-out plan. It has had much input from the communities, and people attended meeting after meeting, and it can be amended at any time, but I think it's a great idea, and I think it's a great start.
I mentioned earlier that I had been involved in the precursor to this, which were the visioning sessions and the strategic plan development. I was invited to participate as a member of this group, and I declined it. It was right after the 2014 election, and I needed a break. So it's wonderful, great input, but I think the key things for you, Howard, to know are it really emphasizes our county's agricultural base when you get away from Ames, and I think that is positive. It says that even in the outlying areas, development needs to occur that's compatible with the surrounding areas so that we don't have kind of a hopscotch type approach to development. It is very economic focused, because that's what the group in the outlying towns and communities are pay a lot of attention to. We need economic development in our small towns. It's not the type of economic development that we would necessarily think of as in Ames, but it's more related to their quality of life. It's related to keeping the grocery store open or the convenience store and that type of thing. There was a transportation, probably one of my biggest disappointments in it, was that the transportation focused on roads and bridges, which are very important, and I hope we get a question on that next. But I'd like to have seen more dealt with about the lack of options for people getting from point A to point B.
John Kramer again. Washington Township is where I live.
Since no one wanted to speak up about the bridges, I'll speak up. I just saw an interactive map on the internet showing a lot of deficient bridges in Story County. Do you have any comments on that?
Yes, we have about 280 or so bridges in Story County. And overall, according to the latest report from the county engineer, it's going to take us over $5 million just to repair the ones that absolutely need repair. And that's bridges and culverts. And you can run anywhere from $100,000 to about $400,000 per bridge to replace these. But we're talking about bridges that are, in many cases, are 100 years old or were developed in the 1950s, built in the 1950s. They're literally eroding. The county has a plan right now. I believe it's 20 years. It might be 30 years to get them all replaced, doing about 3 to 5% per year, to replace them. I think that that's too slow. And I actually, if you go on my website, you will see that I would propose looking at doing a special levy, which we can do, put before the voters, significantly, specifically to address the quicker repair of the bridges and the roads, because the roads are going to take about 20 years also to rotate through on everything that is on the need list for the roads, and that's $20 million we're behind in repairs.
Well, running for supervisor has been an educational experience. I did not realize that Story County has 900 miles of roads that they're responsible for and 250 bridges. Who would believe that there's 250 bridges in Story County? But there are. And many, many of them are over 50 years old. They're deteriorating. They either need to be replaced or they need to be have significant repairs to them. We need some federal help with this. The Congress has not passed the appropriations bill that allows money to be come to the county for this. A 20-year plan to replace bridges is not going to work for Story County. By the time we do that, we're going to have people drive over bridges and they're going to collapse. We need to shorten that up considerably and take care of those bridges and take care of those roads. And again, if it needs to be a special assessment, then that's what it needs to be. These are important to farmers, important to agriculture, and the last thing we want to see on the front page of the Des Moines Register is a combine in Story County in the ditch because the bridge collapsed.
Brenda Brink again. I'm just starting to dig into the tax incremental TIF called, and what it seems to me to be is simply a shell game that the counties lose. And so I'd like to hear your viewpoints on that.
Well, let me ask: Are you referring to how the TIF monies are spent in Story County?
I'm referring to the whole program.
Well, there's a let me at least address a portion of it. The TIF revenues. Many folks in Eastern Story County have thought that those revenues should stay in Eastern Story County, and that. That's where they start, and that's where they should stay. I disagree with that proposal. I think that county revenue is county revenue. I can't imagine a governmental entity trying to do a county budget based upon pieces of Story County where we budget. And in that case, we're going to end up with the haves and the have-nots. If we took the revenue that comes in from the TIF from Eastern Story County and just spent it there, then that would lead to taking the revenue that the county gets from McCallsburg and that we would spend it there. It would also mean that all the revenue from Ames would be spent in the city of Ames. So I think the TIF program needs a lot of work. There was a proposal in the legislature that didn't go very far this year that along the lines of what I just talked about. But I think it's a situation that needs further study, for sure.
I wonder, Loris, if you could explain what a TIF is.
Can I get an extra 30 or 40 seconds? All right.
Okay.
All right. Tax incremental financing is a concept where a special district is created and a base amount is set for value of that district. And then you use any additional funds called incremental funds that are created through tax revenues when you improve that area to pay off the bonds that you borrowed to make the improvements in the first place. Okay? So it's a way to capture loan money. When a city or a county does tax incremental financing, they are grabbing that portion that of the taxes that in between the base and whatever the value is now, they are using that money that also goes to the school district, to the community college, to the other entities who tax within that district. So in essence, they're seizing that money, with the theory being after the tax district is released, after that TIF is done, that these communities will benefit from that higher tax value. But for a while, they don't get any additional money for the value of it. It's been controversial in Iowa. There have been basic uses of it, which have been direct. You've got a factory that wants to expand. This happened in Wisconsin, where I lived and covered this situation. Very basic. A factory got a contract. They needed to expand, which meant they were on a gravel road. They had to bring in big trucks because they actually got a contract with GM, General Motors. They ended up turning around. That community paved the road, put a tax incremental financing district on there, so they borrowed the money. They paid off from the incremental values on the road. And as a result, they paid that off in 6-7 years. But then you have situations where communities have used tax incremental financing, like in Coralville and Iowa City, where they've competed against each other to create new economic development and basically, if you will, stolen companies from one town into the other. I sit on the tax incremental financing committee. Now, can I answer the question? I mean, to explain TIF, and I know I see somebody holding his head, and I, oh, believe me, it's difficult to understand this. In Story County, Brenda, okay, there's a new kind of tax incremental financing district occurring, and that's with counties like us where we have the wind turbines. And wind turbines are being put under tax incremental financing districts, and the money from the wind turbine taxes are being used to go in and create community and economic development projects over the rest of the county. And this is happening not only in Story County, but several other counties in here in Iowa that get turbines. And the great thing, if you will, about the turbines is they don't cost us anything up front. We're not having to build any infrastructure for them. When they come online, when that tax money comes online, it's available immediately to fund projects in other areas. And I'm going to run out of time when I talk about what I'd like to do about tax incremental financing in Story County. I will say two things. I'd like to put a moratorium on doing the county committing to big projects. They already did Dakin's Lake rebuild for about $2.6 million, and now we are entering into a $3.4 million commitment with the Iowa State Research Park, and we're going to be building a natural grasslands area, stormwater swales, and a bicycle path. And I'm not sure that's economic development.
My impression is from talking to people that there's a backfill that goes on when schools, community colleges, counties don't get those taxes, that incremental tax. And so if we have a problem repairing bridges and roads in the county, why would we want to allow those taxes not to be here for the county to use? That's what I meant by shell game. It seems like in some ways the county ends up the loser. That's what I was kind of wondering.
I'm not sure I disagree with you. I think that the whole TIF program is new, and as such, it presents many challenges. And I think the counties are still getting used to the rules that are in place as to how to use the TIF program. I would encourage more public conversation with the Board of Supervisors about this issue. I certainly would be open to hearing more about it and open to opinions of the constituency of Story County to see if we can better use those resources.
Okay. All right. Actually, the tax incremental financing urban renewal has been around since the 1950s, I believe, possibly 1960. Story County has taken it on within the last 5 to 6 years. Okay, so kind of that's where the newness part comes in. The question about backfill. Right now, the state reimburses school districts only, not every entity of government, and they reimburse them at 90% of what they lost in incremental revenue. Part of the problem with that has been that the backfill varies from year to year according to what the legislature allocates to it. And there was a discussion probably 3 or 4 years ago about possibly pulling the backfill money entirely in 1 year. So as far as it being a shell game, yes, because what would happen if you just took the revenues, the base plus the incrementals, and you didn't commit them to any urban renewal district, you just let everybody have their share, then it would be directly into the general budget. Right. It's extra money. And when Story County first talked about doing this, I remember the discussion between Wayne Clinton and Rick Sanders, because Wayne kept on pointing out that that's money we could use for human services.
We had a housing conference in March, and it was decided to go ahead with a local housing trust fund, essentially to develop a proposal to the Iowa Finance Authority to have such a trust fund that would then be a permanent institution to work toward low-cost housing in Story County. I wanted to ask both of you what you have thought about in terms of how the parts of the county that are outside Ames, what the housing issues are that they have, and whether this approach or some other approach would be good, and if the Board of Supervisors would be willing to provide some matching money. There's a match requirement in order to make a housing trust fund work.
Okay, I'm going to start with the question about providing the match fund. A housing trust works to help fund affordable housing projects. And I had to look it up, actually. Even though I attended the all-day conference, I was somewhat confused at the end. Right? And so basically, it's a mechanism. An agency is created that helps fund affordable housing. And usually, there is some government entity who goes ahead and dedicate some type of revenue into it. And in parts of the country where there are all kinds of taxes on crossing the street and everything else, they'll designate one of those taxes. So what you're really asking is, would Story County be willing to come up with some money that would flow into it on a regular basis? As far as I'm concerned, yes. And I hate to go back to that tax incremental financing issue and the wind turbines, but there's money there for that. I would suggest to my fellow supervisors that we cut back on the amount that we're putting into projects right now and put more money into affordable housing. Housing is in demand in the county. Slater just annexed some land, I think, last week, and they're going to put about 136 houses there and a nursing home. Huxley has another about 150 lots coming online. And my time's up again, so I'll stop there. But
well, it's excuse me, it's no secret that affordable housing in Story County is in short supply, and we need to have more of it. This is a growing county. we're going to be attracting more and more people to live in Story County. And not all of them are going to be high-paid professional jobs. We need to have affordable housing for the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. And one of the ways to do that is that housing trust fund. And I certainly would support that. Whether or not the county should put money into it, I believe that if the county could put money into a park that is over at ISU, I think that they can afford to put money into affordable housing.
I have one other question on a topic that we haven't dealt with, and I'm ignorant on this question, but we recently have moved toward regional funding for mental health, and it's clear to me from reading the newspapers that we're not adequately funding mental health under that system, and I would like to ask what the county's role should be in improving mental health access.
Well, it's another one of those questions of don't get me started. April Fool's Day to most of us, the governor implemented privatized Medicaid management. The state hired four profit-making Medicaid management entities to manage the $4.2 billion Medicaid budget in the state of Iowa. Many, many people in our county, Story County, are dependent upon Medicaid. Providers of services are dependent upon Medicaid. And what has happened, I don't know if I can do this with a microphone, what has happened is you've got a $4.2 billion window of Medicaid. The governor wants to save $51 million. Now that window got that much shorter. Now we've invited four private profit-making companies in to manage the Medicaid dollar, and the window gets shorter. What happens to the people on the other side? And they are the consumers and they are the providers. The consumers will get fewer services. They'll get less quality. Providers will get less money for their services. In addition, the managed care entities have set up their own clinics. And if that's not the fox watching the hen house, I don't know what is. That these clinics, people are going to go to these clinics, and they're going to get treated and streeted. And I believe that they're not concerned about the welfare of the individual. They have been told that they are to make profit. And it's interesting that the state of Connecticut had the very same system, privatized Medicaid, and they just fired them, and they went back to their state system because they lost money and quality was poor.
I think a good place to start is to clarify how mental health services get paid for. Of course, those of us who have third-party insurance, right, our insurance company pays for part of it. There are people who self-pay, they write out checks. There are people due to income guidelines and other qualifying guidelines who get Medicaid. And then there are people who don't receive who don't have any of those, either private money or insurance. And Medicaid is really insurance, okay? And those are the people who are served by our mental health region, okay? So what they have in common between people who are served by Medicaid and people who are served by our mental health region are the providers. And our mental health region right now, at every meeting I've attended, they are receiving the core services plus some additional services that they received before. The concern is, like the agency that I sit on the board with, we haven't been paid one dime yet by Medicaid. All right. So that means we're allocating some of our reserves to serve Medicaid patients. But so the question then, Jan, was where's our county role in this and what can we do? Well, obviously advocacy. But this is really Medicaid is a state issue. How it impacts is it impacts the citizens of the county, but they're two separate things, and I know that gets very confusing.
I also think that the county, it is the responsibility of the County Board of Supervisors, not necessarily to take on individual cases where people's Medicaid is being reduced or challenged. But if there is a system, if there's a system in it that is covering the state and covering part of the vulnerable population of Story County, and if that system is not working right, it behooves the Board of Supervisors to use the bully pulpit, if you will, and their advocate position to work very hard with the state to make changes in the system that are going to be beneficial to the people who are served.
Story County has done a good job of that. We have a wonderful advocate who has shifted roles recently from Community Services Director. Also, Wayne Clinton sitting on was the past chair of the Region Mental Health Board, and the supervisors have spoken out. So I'm in agreement with Reno that there is a role out there to continue to push. The main people that we're pushing, unfortunately, are already on our side when it comes to mental health, at least from the standpoint of our elected officials here in Ames. Story County might be a little different overall, but we have three of the biggest advocates in our elected officials from Ames.
Closing statements are the final statement, and you can either sum up the most important things that you think about, or if you want to go back to another question that you'd like to add something to, you can do that. So we will begin with Loris Olson, and you have 3 minutes for your closing statement.
I believe I've shown my sincerity and dedication to want to serve as a Story County supervisor. As I mentioned earlier, I've run twice before, and it was not always a pleasant experience, especially running against popular incumbents. But I brought up issues, and I do believe I changed the dialogue, and I changed some practices with the Board of Supervisors. Now, on January 2nd, 2017, there are going to be two new supervisors of our three taking office. And I hope that some of you are thinking about that at least one of them should understand and have some in-depth knowledge about what happens within the various county governments, units of the county. I believe I'm uniquely qualified and prepared. There's things that I have to catch up on, but I certainly feel that I have devoted a great deal of time to making Story County a leader and a better place just from the sidelines. And I look forward to what I would be able to do if I were actually serving in an official role. So I ask that you vote for me on June 7th. Thank you.
Well, let me start by answering a question that some of you may be asking, and that is, why in the world would Reno Berg run for the Board of Supervisors? Retired in 2013 from Mainstream Living, had a good retirement, and continue to live in Ames. This community has been very good to me. This is my opportunity to give back. 18% of the county budget is spent on human services. That's my expertise. I think I have something to offer with respect to that. Having said that, Story County has a rich history of being very good to human services and taking care of populations that are vulnerable. I want to make sure that that continues and that people with disabilities and vulnerable populations continue to have the opportunities and resources they need to live a great life. In addition, I ran an $18 million company. It was a human service organization, but an $18 million company with 570 employees. And am I ever glad I'm not in charge of 570 employees anymore? But it's about twice the number of employees that Story County has. I think I have something to offer in the terms of management skills. I have been in human services for 50 years. I started in 1967 working with people with disabilities. In that 50 years, I have many, many, many administrative responsibilities. So I have administrative experience, I have management experience, I have practical experience. The community has had 40 years to look at Reno Berg and know about what he does, how he does it, what kind of decisions he makes, and so forth. So I think it's a matter of This lady is certainly qualified. No question about that. I think I'm also qualified. We bring different skill sets to the table. It's a matter of who do you trust or who do you want to make decisions that are data-driven and decisions that are in the best interest of Story County's citizens. And I think after 40 years of living here, I think I'm that person.
Thank you very much, candidates. This has been a very informative evening, and I wish both of you the best of luck. In closing, the League encourages everyone to vote in the primary election on June 7th. There are three contested races in this election. Beside the Democratic candidates for Story County Supervisor, four Democrats are competing to challenge U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley in the general election in November, and there is a Republican challenger to U.S. Representative Steve King, State Senator Rick Bertrand, and then there are several unchallenged candidates who will be on the ballot as well. I might add that Iowa Public Television will feature a debate among the four Democratic candidates seeking to oppose Senator Grassley. That debate will be televised this Thursday night, May 26th, between 7 and 8 p.m. on Channel 11. So the voting will be held on Tuesday, June 7th, from 7 a.m. until 9 p.m. at your assigned polling location. Absentee voting at the Story County Auditor's Office is available now through Monday, June 6th, that is the day before the election. The last day to request an absentee ballot is Friday, June 3rd. Go to the Story County Auditor's website, which is www.storycountyiowa.gov, for the complete candidate list. And Story County, Iowa is all smooshed together, and the letters are all lowercase. Same-day voter registration is permitted in Iowa, giving voters greater opportunity to vote. However, early registration is still encouraged to avoid long waits at the polls. Friday, May 27th, that's this Friday, at 5 p.m. is the deadline for early registration. Again, please visit the Story County Auditor's website for complete information. As a final note, the League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County is sponsoring an electronic voter guide, vote411.org, and you can get bookmarks on the table as you go out the door. All of the candidates have been asked to post biographical information and their responses to issues. I read the responses of the two individuals who are up here, and they're extremely useful in helping you decide who you would like to vote for. This concludes the Story County Supervisor Democratic Candidate Forum. Thank you to the candidates for your commitment to serving the citizens of Story County. Thank you to the City of Ames for allowing us to use the City Council chambers. And thank you to KHOI-FM for allowing us to record this forum for access on their website. I'm not sure exactly when it'll be available, but tell your friends, and I'm sure in a day or so it will be up there.